This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
With Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan, and we very much appreciate you making this show part of your day. Let's get to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline and welcome onto the program Mel Antonin, who we have had on the show several times before. He's a guy I've done a lot of radio with on SiriusXM, who covers Major League Baseball and has for multiple decades. You watch him on Masson TV in town, and you read his work at Masson Sports online. Mel's been dealing with multiple things this year, including COVID-19, and being in touch with him over the last several weeks, you know, kind of monitoring how things are going. Mel, it was great to see that you wrote a story yesterday. Seems like you were starting to come out on the other side, but thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. How are you?
Well, good. I'm doing very well. I think everything that I've been through in the last 6 months are behind me. A full recovery is expected. I had a liver disease. I had COVID for a long time, but I think doctors are expecting a full recovery and just in time for baseball. How about that?
Yeah, no kidding. That's
awesome, man. Glad to hear it.
Can you just kind of give the background on exactly what happened with you, starting with, you know, your autoimmune disease that kind of attacked the liver, and then you get COVID after that? Because I just think we have not heard from a lot of people on air who have dealt with this, and you hear so many of these cases with these athletes. They get it, they don't notice it, and it's gone. And people say, oh, this isn't really a big deal. But you're a healthy guy, and this has been a major, major issue for you.
Yeah, I started out on January 13th, came home from work one night, and was feeling like $1 million. I was feeling very good, and about 3 hours later, I was very, very sick, throwing up all over the bathroom. I actually made it to the toilet. But the point is, I ended up starting the winter with an HLA, or starting the new year 2020 with a liver disease, a rare liver disease that's abbreviated by HLH, and it's an autoimmune disease. And basically, it was a life and death situation. And then once they got that under control, once they got the HLH under control with five or six chemotherapy treatments, I was in the hospital at Sibley for my last chemo treatment, and the doctors noticed a cough, and then they noticed a fever about 99 or 100, and they said, you need to go in for a COVID test. So I went in for a COVID test, and I ended up testing positive for COVID-19, which put me in quarantine for 28 days. And because my immune system from the liver disease was weak, you know, they were a little bit scared. It was kind of a double whammy. One, you had COVID-19, a virus where there's no cure, and a rare liver disease that they didn't know exactly what to do, and it was touch and go for a while. But the point is, I went from HLH to COVID, and then back to HLH, because when the COVID left, it reignited my HLH, and that's what I'm being treated for now.
Wow, man, I can't even imagine. So amazing that you're going through it, and your strength and good cheer are inspirational, Mal. Please go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't have a better way to ask this, but what was the COVID experience like? Go through that.
It was miserable. The first thing was, they said, you know, quarantine for 14 days. And they said, you're probably, given your immune system, you're going to have to be quarantined longer. So I quarantined, I isolated in my bedroom. My wife moved out, and I just laid in bed for 28 days in my bedroom. I didn't leave. The first few days felt very good, very uncomfortable, but I thought, well, this isn't all that bad. Then about the fifth or sixth day, it slammed me big time. I had chills that lasted for 3 or 4 hours. I had high fevers at about 102, 103. I had body aches. Just turning over in bed was very painful. I slept 18, 19, 20 hours a day. I was just in sheer pain. And sometimes in the middle of the day, I'd wake up and my bed would be all wet because I had basically night sweats during the day. And so it was pretty miserable. I had my throat would swell to the point where it would feel like I had sharp glass. I always describe it to family as it felt like Christmas tree, broken Christmas tree ornaments were in my throat, and I had to deal with that. But it was painful for many hours during the day, and the doctors said there's no need for you to come to the hospital even though you're in pain because, one, we don't have room for you, and there's nothing we can do for you anyway. So the point is, if you have breathing problems, come in immediately. Or if your temperature hits 103, come in immediately. And there were times when my temperature was 102.8, and I didn't really know what to do. We were right on the edge. And but, you know, I got through it. And then one morning I woke up, and I was completely cool. And I told my wife, I said, I don't think I have a temperature anymore. And, of course, the CDC guidelines said that if your fever goes for 72 hours consecutively, chances are you're over COVID. So I was, and then you know, I had a bunch of other things to deal with. But COVID is nothing to mess around with. I was very sick and very pained, and I'd go to bed at night wondering if I was going to wake up or wondering if my temperature would hit 104 and I'd sleep through that. What would happen then? There was a lot of scary times.
At Mel Antonin on Twitter joining us on Grant and Danny, covers the Orioles, the Nationals for Masson in town. Mel, people hear this and they might say, well, you had the pre-existing condition that made it worse for you, but I want you to explain, your wife got this as well, and it was no walk in the park for her either. And oh, by the way, poor Emmett, your kid, who's I think 13 now, yeah. I mean, he's at the house, and both of you guys are quarantined in your room. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it was pretty scary. In fact, I think people ask, where did you get it? And we don't really know. But my wife went to a travel convention. In downtown Washington before COVID was really in the news big
when
time.
When was that?
That was in March? I think in early February, late January.
Okay.
And I think that's when it came in. I mean, that's what she's projecting. I could have gotten it in the hospital. Who knows? There's no real definitive answer. But what was interesting is my wife's symptoms were breathing issues. She couldn't breathe at times, and we'd get up in the middle of the night and watch the and call, you know, call the telemedicine hotline to find out if we should come in or not. And there were times when she'd walk up the stairs and halfway up she had to stop and just catch her breath again. But it kind of goes back and forth with her. But there was about a week there, at least several days, where Emmett, my son, 13 years old, was running the house, and he would just leave food at our doors, and
oh,
you know, because we didn't want to infect him. But what's interesting about her COVID is she actually did go in a couple weeks ago with breathing issues. She tested negative. And the doctor told her that we are seeing a lot of people like that, people who had breathing issues like she did, and then a few months later, they might go away, but they come back periodically. So every now and then, she has a breathing issue, but there are days when she's riding her bike and doing a lot of physical activity, and then there's days when she can't catch her breath still.
Meaning, so she tested positive, she no longer has it, but the breathing issues aren't completely gone.
Exactly. You got it. Yep, that's
wow,
it.
That's
and so, I mean, the doctors are unaware. They're not sure. You know, you ask a question like, well, now that I've experienced COVID and had it and gotten rid of it, am I immune to it? And they go, they don't know. I mean, they're still studying it. But that's one of the symptoms that I didn't really have. I didn't have a lot of breathing issues, but I had other symptoms.
Mel, before this, what was your view of it? And in other words, like I have people in my life that are on all parts of the spectrum. Some people are just sort of scoffing at it, and they don't think it's a real threat, and other people are terrified to go outside. What was your view before your experience?
Well, I was in the hospital when I first heard about it, so I was dealing with my HLH and trying to stay alive, just to put it bluntly. So the first time I heard about it, I heard about it on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. I was listening to it I was listening to the news on TV one night, and that's the first I heard of it. And, you know, I had so many other health issues going on, I just kind of let it go, thinking that that was in the early stages. But now that I know about it, I mean, the number of people that it's killed and the cases we have and how many cases we don't know we have, you know, how many cases are there really out there, I think it's very dangerous, and I think we have to take it seriously.
There's no doubt about that. Mel Antonin is with us on Grant and Danny. Mel, we didn't really get to talk any baseball. I don't know what's on the itinerary, but you want to hop back on with us here in a minute, and we can actually get into some baseball with you, some Nats and some O's?
That'd be great. That'd be great.
All right, so let's do that. We'll step away for a second here on Grant and Danny. Mel Antonin, who you can hear now, has got the full strength of the voice back and healthy, a little different than he was sounding on the phone weeks ago after a harrowing tale. We'll break down baseball, which is what he likes to do, not talking about COVID-19 and his illnesses. We'll do that next right here on The Fan.
My name's Danny Rouillet, and I'm a Ted Britt guy. I can prove it. Three-time Ted Britt customer right here. That's right. When it's time for Ford, guess where I'm going? I'll go ahead, guess. It's Ted Britt Ford. That's the answer. The Drive into Summer event is happening right meow at Ted Britt Ford in Fairfax and Chantilly. It's 0% financing for 72 months on select 19 and 2020 Ford models. That's pretty good. How about this? 0% financing for 84 months on a 2019 F-150. Or, and this is an or now, $11,000 off when you buy a 2020 F-150 from Ted Britt Ford. That's pretty good. How about $7,100 off the MSRP on a 2020 Ford Explorer? But I'm not an SUV guy, Danny. What do you have for me? Well, how about this? $6,600 off the MSRP on a 2020 Ford Mustang. Huh? You like that? Boom goes the dynamite. Pass it to the man. And you can shop online. Over 1,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs to choose from. Complete your transaction right there online or over the phone. Ted Britt, you know what they'll do? They'll deliver the brand new sanitized Ford right to your front door. These guys are the best. Let them win your business. Hit them up and tell them Danny sent you.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Our friend Mel Antonin of Masson Sports is joining us. We were just talking to him about his battle with COVID-19, and I wanted to get his thoughts with baseball ramping back up on a 60-game sprint. He's covered the game for decades, never seen anything quite like this. One last question, though, before we get into it. I thought this would be important because, Mel, I get all the different opinions on this, and I understand the severity of COVID, and I get when people say, hey, well, we've got to some extent live our lives and keep the economy afloat as well. The one thing I don't really have much patience for and can't quite figure out are people who just refuse to wear masks and say they're not going to do it at a store. If you've got to go out and go somewhere with, you know, the immune issue that you had, I mean, you're more at risk of something than others might be. I think about people like you when people refuse to wear masks. What's your take, though, on just generally right now, as we kind of open things back up, the masks and your comfort going out and doing things with what you've been through?
I'm comfortable as long as I have a mask on. I live on Capitol Hill. There's a lot of people wearing masks. But the CDC says it can cut back it can cut back cases like 80%. So it's like wearing a seatbelt, or it's like learning to drive when you've had too much, not drive when you're drunk. I mean, there's things that you have to do to protect society. So I think it's very important, and it makes all the difference in the world. I wear a mask wherever I go, and I'm assuming when I go to baseball games this year, I'll be wearing a mask as well. But I think it's very important.
Yeah, so we're going to have baseball, at least in theory. Do you see Major League Baseball with a coherent plan here, Mel, to kind of prevent outbreaks? And what do you think kind of the level of acceptability is in terms of the inevitable positive tests that are going to come with some of these guys?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't see how they – I'm not sure how they can get through the season, a 60-game season, with what CDC officials are saying about a second wave or how hard we're going to get hit this fall. But I think it's worth a try. I think the 67-page document that details all the safety precautions I think can work. They're going to try to keep players, you know, outside the clubhouse as much as possible during spring training. So I think I think there has to be a balance. I think you have to try, but I think you have to be very safe as well. You can't go too far one way or the other. You can't say, well, there's no harm. We'll just play ball, let fans in, whatever. But, you know, I think there's a balance, and I think it's a good thing to try at least. Baseball needs to do it because they cannot be idle for 17 months and expect fans to love the game like they did before.
It's a great point, and it was one of my big concerns when they were fighting over what was going to happen, Mel, and they couldn't agree on the money part of this. Do you think 60 games is enough for a credible result? I mean, are we going to be able to separate the best from the worst over 2 months of baseball?
No, we're not, but I think that kind of makes it fun because individual statistics mean nothing. It's like it's going to be like watching the World Series, the three-inning conclusion to the Tampa Bay Rays, Philadelphia Phillies World Series a few years back. It's going to be fun, but baseball's got a lot of problems. The games are too long. There's too many relief pitchers. There's too much analytics. The average age of the television viewers in the late 50s, they got to have labor peace at least to get things going. So the last thing they needed to do was fight for 4 months during a pandemic over all these labor issues, but that's exactly what they did. But no, 60 games is not a legitimate season. On the other hand, it'll be a novelty and it'll be fun to watch.
Who do you think not specific teams, obviously teams that are really good should be favored here, Mel, but what kind of team would you say would be favored in a 60-game sprint? Is it a team with great starting pitching, a team with great bullpen, a team with great offense who could just sort of slug? What do you think this sprint sort of style might favor?
I think it's going to be pitching depth because starters are not going to be able to go seven innings, not that they do that much anyway, but I think it's going to be pitching depth that's going to make a difference. I just said that one of baseball's problems is there's too many relief pitchers in the game. That may be true, but I think we're going to see a lot of that as well. I think the two most interesting pitching rotations that we got going are the Miami Marlins, who got a lot of young pitchers that pitched very well for a 60-game stretch at the end of last year. They could be a surprise team. That'll be interesting. And then the Toronto Blue Jays have overhauled their rotation, led by Hyunjin Ryu of the Dodgers, Tanner Roark, Chase Anderson. I think those two teams, Toronto and Miami, might be a surprise simply because their rotations are so good. Toronto overhauled the rotation, and Miami's rotation was pretty darn tough at the end of the year.
A couple of the rule changes that are coming to baseball. We didn't get as many as we thought we might. Mel Anthony breaking it all down with us here on Grant and Danny. You've read his work for years in USA Today, and he's with Masson Sports now, where you can watch him on Masson TV in the area. But we've got the runner at second base to start extra innings to try to cut down on how many extra innings are going to get played. And then the DH will be implemented in the National League. Do you think either of those will be popular and stick?
I don't think the runner at second base in extra innings will stick. I think there'll be too much opposition to it. But I think, generally speaking, players, they're the ones that are going to be affected most. They got to get out of the stadium as quickly as possible. So I think it's good for a 60-game season. You might as well experiment some. So I don't think that's that bad. And the DH now is up for grabs. I like the variety. I like the fact that the American League does it one way, the National League does it the other. But I think eventually what's going to happen is there's a lot of movement in the Players Association that says, hey, we want a DH. So I think we're going to see a universal DH after the next CBA, which runs out in December of 2021. But I like it the way it is. I think it's kind of fun.
Mel, super quick, what's your biggest Nationals question?
Biggest Nationals question would be well, who's going to play third base, and what will happen there? That's where the most inexperience is, and that'll be a question. But I think they're going to be solid with their pitching. They've got a good defense. But my question is, what's going to happen at third base?
Yeah, you get Carter Kieboom some opportunities. This is Drubal Cabrera carry the mantle there for a little while. On the other side of the Mid-Atlantic here, where you guys break the teams down on Masson, you got the Orioles. I mean, you could play 10 games or 60 games, and my guess is that they would appear to be not very good because that's how they're built right now. But do we know yet, as far as like the draft positioning, are they going to base draft picks just on how teams finish? It'd be a little bit easier, I would think, to tank over these 60 games. And how will a team like the Orioles that's trying to build through the draft, do we know how their draft position is going to be determined yet?
No, that's a good question. Of all the things I've read and all the reporting I've done in the last couple of days, I really haven't asked that question, but I will. But I would assume, just like there's going to be a trading deadline on August 31st, I would assume that the team that finishes last is going to get the first pick. I think the interesting thing with the Orioles is, what do they do with somebody like Ryan Mountcastle, who is a tremendous hitter? He strikes out a lot. He needs plate discipline. That's what he was going to work on in AAA in the minor leagues. But given that he's part of the Orioles' future, you might as well let him play 60 games at the big league level.
Mel, great to catch up with you, man. We could talk a whole bunch of baseball, but most importantly, glad you're doing well, and we're thinking about you, man.
Thanks, guys. Good. I listen to you guys a lot, so good. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you, pal.
We appreciate it, Mel, and I'll tell you, buddy, I know it probably isn't easy to talk about what you went through, but I think it's important for people to hear just how serious this was and what your story is. We have not talked to many people on air who have dealt with this, obviously, so I think that that's helpful.
Well, I think that's the reason I talk about it, is I think it can help people. As a reporter, you expect other people to be open in these situations, so... So I owe it to people to be open in these situations if they have questions, because I think it can help.
Well, we appreciate it. Mel Anton, and boys and girls, check him out on Mass. And thank you, buddy.
See you guys.
All right, be well. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. We'll go blitzing with the teams in town you care the most about at noon. 12:45 today, we're creeping up on Movie Club. We watched Indiana Jones last night. We'll pick a movie for this weekend as well right here on The Fan. With games in their venues without fans, right? One of the things that some of the clubs are doing is they're putting up either like dolls or different types of mannequins or cutouts of folks in the stands. And I know, Danny, you and I both at different points said, I don't really get that. I don't really love that. It's not necessary. Why are you doing this? Well, I want to give the San Francisco Giants some credit here, though. This, to me, is a creative, cool idea. So the Giants made the announcement to their fans yesterday and sent a message out to all their season ticket holders that at Oracle Park, they will not be having any fans in the stands at any point this season. But they want to allow their season ticket holders to send an image of themselves, which they will then place on cutouts to be displayed in the stands during home games. Now, I don't know how specific this will be. Like, do you tell them what seat you would have had, and then they put that cutout in your actual seat? Or are they just randomly going to assign them around the lower bowl? I don't really know. But the Giants are calling this the Fan Cutout Program. The team said the cutouts will be an opportunity for fans to, quote, be at Oracle Park even when you're home watching the game. The cutouts will be made, according to ESPN.com, of weatherproof material, will be placed as close to the season ticket holders' seats as possible, but not all of them, I guess, will be in the specific designated seats because, you know, these cutouts are not people, so it's going to take configuring this properly. But according to the Giants, for $99, which is what they're charging, the team is allowing, giving the option for non-season ticket holders to have their cutout images displayed in the stands as well. So if you already bought your season tickets, this is free. If you're just Danny Hoo-Hey and you want your cutout at Nats Park behind home plate, for $99, you can get it. I know that in the past we've said, yeah, this isn't necessary. But I like the creativity of teams trying to do something for the fans here.
Yeah. So, you know, this is all makeshift. This is all, again, normally under normal circumstances, let's say like the Marlins, right, who weren't going to draw but 7,000 fans a game, if they were allowed to have fans at this point. If they did this, you'd go, oh, that's so pathetic. You know what I mean? Like, that's just so ridiculous. You're going to charge fans to have their face there so they could pretend that they were. What are you talking about? Well, now, yeah, great idea. You know, applause break for this plan. It's smart. Do that. I think it's a cool deal. So the problem with you couldn't get your exact seat is if you had like a partial plan, like if you had a 25-game package. Well, someone else has those, you know, has, 60 games or 55 games or something else like that, right? So then it would be a challenge, as you're talking about. So you just try to do the best you can with it. But that's cool. I like that. Instead of the sex dolls that other countries have done or other, you know, the leagues have done, or like weird mannequins that have no face, do that.
Like,
that's neat.
Stuffed animals or something strange.
Yeah.
No, this is. I think this is cool. So I have a few questions, most notably. I wonder what the amount of interest is going to be. Like, just thinking for myself, okay? I would not pay $99 to have a cutout of me at Nats Park. That's just not something I would do. But if I had a kid let's say, who was old enough to be a big fan and love going to the games, like 7 or 8 years old or something, who's got a Juan Soto jersey, who can't wait to get back to Nats Park, and who's on the verge of tears when he finds out there might not be baseball this year. I could see as an activity with that kid where we say, listen, buddy, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send in our pictures, and our pictures are going to be put on these cardboard cutouts, and we're going to be at the ballpark. And I think a kid might find that really cool. And as a family activity, in the same way you turn a laundry basket into a roller coaster or something, because you're just trying to make the most out of this situation and build a couple of memories, and you're hoping that your kid can enjoy this a little bit more than they would otherwise. I could see absolutely doing this. Like, if I'm you with Bill, if he was a big Nats fan or something, that to me is probably your target market. I don't think that many, like, single 27-year-old dudes are just going to send in their $100 to get their cutout. But I think from a family perspective, there could be some interest in this. I doubt they'll fill the lower bowl or anything. But if a few thousand season ticket holders do it, and another 150 or 200 fans send in $99 to have their cutouts and their pictures put in the ballpark, then I think it was probably worth it. I mean, you don't have to get a full house worth of people responding to make this and to justify doing it.
It can lead to good bits. I mean, think about the fun bits, right? Where all we're trying to do is make this fun. Like, baseball hates fun. Baseball has no idea how to make their game fun. I mean, players do. Players are fun guys, but like, owners, they can't figure out how to sell it. And Mel touched on this. Mel Antonin, who was on with us a little bit ago, the average age is closing in on 60 of your normal baseball viewer, right? They're not reaching. So think about how fun it would be to have like Adam Eaton pretend to sign autographs for fake fans with pictures, and like just have Sean Doolittle do a monologue while he's like signing for pretend fans, or, you know, whatever it is. You could do a million things with that. It's fun. Allow this bizarre year to make light of it. So, you know, sometimes, like, the funniest jokes are told at, you know, the most inopportune moments, right? Sometimes you can't stop laughing, or when, like, there's just nothing but tragedy and bleakness all around you. Well, this is kind of that. This is miserable. This sucks. Everybody's so annoyed all the time. This could be fun. Let it happen.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what other clubs do this. And we really don't know yet, Danny, if there will be any fans in the stands at any venues. Because this is all kind of geographical and state to state, and the case loads are different everywhere, and the rules are different, obviously, everywhere, and what phases some of the locations are in right now compared to others. But you've got the Giants who are saying, hey, there won't be any fans this season. We're sorry. Let's do this thing where you send us a picture. I do wonder, it certainly won't be initially, those first couple weeks, I wouldn't think, but there are places where they have better control right now over COVID-19 around the world, where they're having thousands of fans fill up stadiums. I wonder by the end of the baseball season if there will be some venues where fans are there and others where there aren't, meaning some teams have a home field advantage of some sort and others just don't. I don't know the answer. I don't think anybody does right now, but I guarantee what we could find out right now is, are there owners, are there teams that are saying, let's not punt. Right now you have to make the decision. Are we going to push forward to try to get fans in the stands at some point or no? And it seems like the Giants have basically said, that's not happening this year. We're punting on that. But I'll bet you there are going to be some teams that don't and kind of hold out hope that at some point they can have fans filing into their ballpark in some distant way with masks.
This is so fluid, man. Like, every time we think we've got a grasp on it, you know, you get a record number of cases in Florida today. Every time we think we got a grasp on it, Texas is now putting more restrictions back in place. You know, like, the narrative of this thing, everybody wants to plant a flag on the ground and claim how correct they were about some aspect of it. The reality is, this is just so bleeping complicated. It's just so absurd. Like, there's again, the thing I always come back to is the answer in, you know, New Jersey is not the same as the answer in Nebraska. The answer in Kansas City is not the same as the answer in Seattle. There's a million permutations therein. Like, nobody knows anything. And is it going to be fair? No. Because you're right. There's going to be some stadium that, where you can figure out how to get 10,000 people in the lower bowl or something, right? And people are going to be excited about that. And it might help the team. But this is not a year of fairness. This is a year of just sucking it up and dealing with it.
I just got a text from a buddy who's plugged in the industry who says, he's talked to at least one player who said that what they've heard is that their owner is hoping to have at least 25% capacity early on and up to 50% before it's all said and done.
Wow.
So, I mean, look, if that's what they're thinking, good luck, I suppose, and hopefully you keep everybody healthy, but I promise you that's not going to be the norm. That might be one or two teams thinking that. And depending on where you're at in the country, you might have a lot of support from your fan base to do it. I mean, you might have fans who say that they want to be there and they will fill up that ballpark and they'll be knocking the door down to get in. Grant and Danny on the Fan, our double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Every day at this time, we give you a double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. So, Danny, I'll make mine short and sweet and get out of the way here. I saw this on some, like, Reddit post that someone passed along to me as a screen grab at some point. I thought it was really cool, and I wanted to throw this off of you. A bunch of people have confirmed this to me. Now, these people are just random people I don't know, so this confirmation might not carry a lot of weight with you. But I want to know if you've ever heard this. It was on a Reddit thread about like something that you learned today, I guess. It said in 1980, SEAL Team 6 was formed and numbered SEAL Team 6 after SEAL Team 2 to make Russian analysts believe there were three more teams, overestimating the U.S. Special Forces.
Is that right?
So I've always assumed when I heard SEAL Team 6, like, okay, we got five other SEAL teams, and everyone's like, SEAL Team 6 is the most badass, and there's movies about them. But that it got its name, basically, because they skipped a bunch of numbers so that the bad guys thought there were more of these teams than there actually are, which I think worked brilliantly because that's certainly what I thought. Had you ever heard that before?
I had not, and I'm surprised it didn't come up in a Tom Clancy novel where he ends up, like, you know, giving the Russians secrets. that's very Tom Clancy-ish to reveal stuff like that. But I hadn't heard that before, and that doesn't surprise me. I mean, the Cold War was about information as much as anything else. And believe it or not, the United States was at a massive disadvantage. Now, bear with me here. I'll take our society over gulags for dissidents. And, you know, if you don't say the party line, you get thrown in an underground prison and the torturing and their, you know, how terrible they were. Talking about the Russians. I'll take the U.S. society every time, 100 times out of 100, please and thank you. But when it comes to having an open society about free speech and accountability and records, that's really hard to run a secret war. It's really hard when you're dealing in information, and everything about the KGB, about the Soviet Union, was like closed doors, nobody tells you anything. So they had like a leg up when it came to that sort of stuff. So when you hear about that from the U.S., I love that. Because you got to find a way to return serve. You got to find a way to go back and forth in this, again, this war of information, which is really what the Cold War was all about. That is really cool to hear.
I don't know how to make this make sense or to describe this, what I'm about to say, because it's just going to sound childish and dumb. I just think it's cool when on such a grand level, like country versus country in terms of defense, you're doing things to fake each other out that, like, I would think of and do. You know what I'm saying? Like, you would think that it's that as a country, you're just like, oh, that's such a silly idea. But it's just like something you would do to fake someone out. You would name yourself something wacky so people think that there's other people. I don't know. I saw that, and I thought that was really, really cool. Before you get to your double play really quick, just to read some tweets on the people that are discussing our last segment on the cardboard cutouts. I thought this was hysterical. Wookiee of the Year said, I just gave myself a stomach ache imagining Marlins man spending so much cash to get a cutout of him in every major ballpark in every seat. I mean, it's so true. Tell me that guy wouldn't just fill up an entire ballpark in San Francisco with his Marlins man cutout. And there's a guy here who says he's going to talk with his kids about possibly doing it. And he thinks it could be fun. So if they do it at Nats Park, they might have a little bit of run with some of the families. It is time for Danny's double play.
Do it quickly here, Jeeps. The Last of Us Part 2, I've mentioned it before, on PlayStation. It's a PlayStation exclusive, okay? Exclusive games and things. There's a whole bunch of properties associated with PlayStation. It looks like they may have a leg up when it comes to the PS5 coming out here holiday season. It sold 4 million units in the first 3 days. It is 100% for adults. It's not a kid's game. It's not accessible for like a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, etc. It is an adult game. With adult themes and it's gory and it's like playing a horror movie and it's incredible. I love it so much. I just want to play it all the time. But it sold 4 million units within the first 3 days. It's second in terms of some of these, or it's one of the highest system-specific selling games over the first early periods. It's one of the fastest selling games for a console exclusive in history. A game like Red Dead Redemption 2 sold 10 million units in its first 2 days, but that was on both systems. So this is only on PlayStation, and it sold 4 million units in the first day. So I'm going to put my friend Grant on the spot. I will tell you this, I couldn't have named most of these. How many of the top 10 all-time selling individual video games do you think you could mention for consoles?
All right, ready?
Yes.
Madden.
No. Madden overall has sold an incredible amount, but think about
but
each year, like
releases.
06, 07, each one counts
All
as
right.
its own game.
Grand Theft Auto.
Which one? Because there is a Grand Theft Auto in there.
I don't even know the numbers. Five, I don't know.
Five, yes, five. Number two all time.
Okay, Grand Theft Auto. Let's go Zelda.
The Legend of Zelda did not make it, believe it or not. I would have guessed Zelda, by the way.
What's the one with the Galahorns?
Destiny.
Destiny.
Nope.
Okay. I'll give you one more guess here.
Think
I'm
a little
sure
bit more old school. A couple old school
radio.
With this. A couple old schools. Old school.
Call of Duty.
No single Call of Duty made it into the top 10,
really?
Believe it or not. They've had several in the top 50, like top 100 or whatever, and they've done very well for themselves, but no, not in the top 10. Here we go.
Mario?
Yeah, Super Mario Brothers.
Oh,
there
that's really old school. Okay, I'm thinking all these first-person shooters. Okay, what about Donkey Kong?
Donkey Kong does not make it. More of an arcade port.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic doesn't make it.
Damn. This is a bad
I know, it's
list.
Hard. Try to make some shapes fit as you're doing these guessing.
Tetris?
Tetris, number three all time.
Nubs. So
yeah,
what's
you're doing
the,
really
give me
well.
The top five?
Minecraft is number one, and it's running laps around the whole world. Grand Theft Auto 5 is number two. Tetris, number three. Wii Sports is number four. Wii Sports, basically shipped with the Wii. Players Unknown Battlegrounds is number five. And Super Mario Brothers is number six.
I did as bad as you would have thought that I would have done.
I wouldn't have
come
most
back
of these
to
either.
This because I want to talk about the exclusivity of games on one system as opposed to both. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's get to the Blitz next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.